From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. On today's show, with help from our partners at the Index on Censorship in London, we've got the second in our three-part series on the struggles of local news outlets all around the world. Now, on our last program, we heard about how the decline of print advertising and the rise of social media has dramatically reduced the number of news organizations covering local and regional governments right here in the United States and in the United Kingdom. We also heard about the expansion of zones of silence in Mexico, where drug cartels in some areas effectively censor local coverage of cartel-related crime and violence. But the decline of local news is hardly limited to these three countries. On today's show, we're going to look further afield and talk about how news organizations are under pressure on three different continents. Now, in a few minutes, we'll hear about the big challenges for local news in Argentina and then in Poland, and what that means in two countries where democracy is relatively new. But up first, we're going to hear about the situation in the world's largest democracy. That, of course, is India. And in India, there is great demand for local news as literacy rates have risen even in the impoverished countryside. For more on the challenges for local journalists there, though, we're going to bring in Rituparna Chatterjee in New Delhi. She's a freelance reporter who's written for a number of major outlets. Her latest article for the Index on Censorship magazine is called India Shifts Local. Rituparna, welcome.
Hi, glad to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Well, talk to us, if you would, about sort of this rising demand for local news in India.
Yeah, so this, especially in the, I don't know if you know, but India's just had its general elections, where the ruling party, the ruling government, was voted in for a second term. And just before the elections, there have been and, you know, increasing demand, like a surge in demand of local news, mostly related to politics. And this is fed mainly by small, micro-local, hyper-local news outfits, news organizations, who run on a shoestring budget. So there's a great demand of community news. And as we can see, during any election time in India, These hyper-local news outfits working at the grassroots, they pretty much feed the network of national media.
Well, talk to us, if you would. You know, we heard on our previous program about the struggles for local news organizations in the United States, in the United Kingdom, because their business model based on advertising has just vaporized. How does that work in India? I mean, is there a way to finance this?
So yeah, in India as well, it's not different in India. For example, like, we had a demonetizing round where the government overnight scrapped currency notes of higher values, and that severely hit small businesses. And if you, the way Indian news network in smaller towns and cities work is these small businesses basically fund these news outlets. The advertisers, brands advertise in these small newspapers, and with the fund cash crunch, with demonetization hitting these small businesses, advertisers just, you know, that cash completely dried up, hitting units of, say, 20, 30 member teams, and which works from state level, smaller towns and cities. They were really severely hit. But it's no different in major cities as well. The national media, there's been a stringent cost cutting. There's been last couple of weeks, we've seen one major outlet announcing a suspension of its newspaper that it had announced would open. And there have been job losses. There are more job losses in the pipeline. Media is struggling. And one of also the major cause of how smaller news outfits are hit with a cash fund is also the independence. Media ownership right now is controlled by certain people.
So it sounds like it's very concentrated there then. There's a few families that control most of the major national news outlets, but they also control regional newspapers as well and have a large share of that market.
It's a filter down effect. So with micro-local news outfits drying up, there is a direct challenge to freedom of press, because if you don't have independent members of news media outlets in the market, you will not have different sides, different views, different opinions. You will have the major players controlling the news.
Well, I think that's an issue that you touched on in your article as well. I understand there was a report from Reporters Without Borders that counted 118,000 different registered publications in India. So obviously, there's a huge number of publications out there, and yet, as you pointed out in your article, there are still some huge gaps in local coverage. Obviously, India is a very large country, very diverse. There's dozens of different languages spoken. Talk to us about some of these areas where there's almost no local news coverage.
So if you see how major news operations, media outlets work in major cities, the tier one cities, as we say, the metropolitans, and how news filters down to the tier two, tier three cities, which are the smaller towns and cities, there is a major gap. There is not just a major gap in news penetration, there is also a major gap in news pay, the way reporters are paid, the way news is consumed, and also the way news is interpreted. Many of our local micro-level, hyper-local-level reporters are under tremendous pressure from, you know, local authorities. Even now, journalists, I work for Reporters Without Borders, and we constantly track incidences in which journalists come under attack, and that has increased. That is a constant now. Journalists being, you know, who's critical of the state being picked up. So there are various, you know, layers to the way the news story in India. It's a huge, diverse, vast country. There are, of course, regional news outfits which are bigger, slightly bigger than the others, which thrive, and they thrive on a network of local contributors who have severely badly paid. And there are the major, you know, market dominating the market are your India's largest newspaper, news house, for example, the Times of India. They almost dominate the market. So there are various.
So this is, it sounds like, so there's this big divide between sort of like the elite media based in large cities, and then the, if you're working for a local news outlet or if you're in a rural area, the way you get your news is much different because the news organizations themselves that cover it are much smaller. But talk to us, if you would, as well, about this phenomenon, which we've also seen in the United States, of people getting their local news on social media via WhatsApp groups, via Facebook groups. How did that shake out during the campaign in India?
It's a huge problem. The fake news industry kind of exploded and brought with it its own, you know, ecosystem of problems. For example, overnight, fact-checking websites sprung up because of, you know, there was this explosion of fake news on WhatsApp, and it's not just one. Propaganda is one thing. Propaganda for any party, political party, is one thing. But in a country like India, which is where diverse, you know, cultures and multicultural, you know, ecosystem that exists in India, it actually, fake news and propaganda news actually put people in risk of violent physical harm. They put people in risk of riots breaking out. So that was a huge problem.
So these groups then, it sounds like, could be used to foment ethnic division, religious division. Absolutely. Then just based on people posting fake things in Facebook groups. And what's interesting then is it sounds like this sort of WhatsApp journalism, if you will, is in many ways has replaced what would have been traditional local journalism.
It hasn't really, because there is, journalists still are doing their jobs. Journalists at any level, no matter how badly paid they are, and journalists, as you know, are one of the most poorly paid profession in anywhere, actually, not just in India. But they're still doing their jobs. They're still, the reporting system has not, the reporting, the way news is covered is still not changed. But there is, with a digital explosion, where anyone with a laptop and anyone with, you know, can open a website and run a website on a shoestring budget. Fact-checking is one of the areas which is severely suffering. And of course, as I said, that in India, in a country like India, a false, factually incorrect news actually can spark off riots. So I wouldn't say WhatsApp journalists have taken over. Yes, there is a real threat of fake news, but there's also, you know, the media network that India has also compensates for that.
Well, Rituparna Chatterjee, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you.
This is Global Journalist. On today's program, we're taking a look at the big challenges for local news organizations around the world. This problem is so acute and widespread that our partners at the Index on Censorship magazine devoted an entire edition of their spring 2019 report specifically to this issue. Up next, we're going to shift to Eastern Europe, where local news agencies face not only economic difficulties, but the rise of right-wing populist governments that have demonized independent media. For more on this, we're going to bring in Adam Reichart. He's the editor-in-chief of the journal New Eastern Europe. In the most recent issue of Index on Censorship, he wrote about the assassination of the mayor of the port city of Gdansk in Poland and how the media helped foment a climate for political violence there. Adam joins us now from Krakow. Welcome.
Thank you.
Well, talk to us just a little bit about the backstory here to this assassination that took place in Gdansk.
Well, it was quite a shocking event, actually, for Poland. And it really did send a lot of shockwaves throughout the society. And there are different factors that led up to it. But we really do look at the level of media and the toxic type of reporting that has come out and the polarization in the media, particularly right-wing media and state-owned public television and radio. So at the end of or in the fall of last year, there were local elections in Poland, and including mayor elections. And Paweł Adamowicz, who has been the mayor in Gdańsk for many years. This is probably his sixth term he was running for. He was very much ahead in the polls, and the candidate that was running against him was coming from the ruling party, which rules at the national level, the Law and Justice Party, and they really threw everything at him that they could, including media reports, and there were some really toxic and nasty media reports that were going against him. But at the end of the day, he actually won with 65% of the vote in Gdańsk. So it showed that he was a very popular mayor. And
we should point out that this right-wing nationalist Law and Justice Party has been in power in Poland for the past several years then. Go ahead.
Since 2015.
But I understand that the mayor who was stabbed to death during a rally in January by a man who I guess he may, it's not clear exactly what his motives were, but the mayor's, Paweł Adamowicz, his widow blamed state television controlled by the Law and Justice Party for his death.
That's right. And it's unclear if really state television was 100% the motivating factor, but clearly political reasons were. And he had been just released from prison. He was imprisoned for many years. He's from Gdańsk South for bank robberies. And he blamed at that time it was the ruling party. Now it's the opposition party, which for many years Paweł Adamowicz had been connected to, the Civic Platform Party. There have been some media reports that say that in the prisons they only have public media. And so he was watching public media TV reports, which were demonizing Paweł Adamowicz very extensively. So that definitely could have played an impact and had some influence on his decision. And when he ran on the stage with a knife and attacked the mayor, stabbed him to death, he immediately grabbed a microphone. It was during a charity event, so there was a big crowd, a lot of people, a lot of chaos. And he grabbed the microphone after he had stabbed the mayor, and he said that this is for his imprisonment, which he blames the previous ruling party, which is now the opposition party, the Civic Platform. So there was clearly political element.
Well, what about since this happened? Obviously, this is a huge moment in Polish politics. Has there been some reflection by the Polish media, by state television, on what they broadcast, on their sort of demonization of people?
Yeah, that's actually the big unfortunate news. There hasn't been really a lot of reflection. Of course, you know, in other media, like more liberal outlets or more objective outlets, there was a lot of discussion. But the state-owned media really tried to avoid any sort of self-reflection, blaming themselves. I mean, they also even went out of the way, if you look at some of the reports in the aftermath, to point out that this was a criminal, he was mentally unstable. There may have or may not have been any sort of political motivation for the attack. So unfortunately, there hasn't been that kind of reflection, not in like the broad media sphere as we know it. And that's really unfortunate also because, I mean, we think about the reach that the public TV does have, and it is quite strong. I saw some recent data which said that 83% of Polish people still use TV as their primary media, as their news source, and we can guess that that's more largely in the older populations, not living in the urban areas but more in the rural areas. So it really did have this did avoid this kind of discussion, unfortunately.
And we should point out too that this Polish public media, it has in the past been more in the tradition of the BBC, in that it's sort of funded by the state but has reported the news objectively. But that's something that's changed over the last couple of years.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, you can, of course, always find bias in media. So even before this government came to power, there were some, you know, you could question some reports. But generally, if you look at it and if you analyze it, it was fairly, public TV was fairly, and radio, was fairly objective, yes, and based on this BBC style. Since coming to power, they really, the ruling party, the populist conservative party, Law and Justice, really reconfigured how the public media works and fired a lot of journalists, actually, who were not agreeing with this policy, or a lot of journalists quit. So you have, so we had a rotation. A lot of you know, the programs were the same, so the people still recognized the programs, but all new journalists, and the message clearly was non-critical, pro-government, pro-policy, and that just shows that it has lost this objectivity.
Well, earlier in our program, we were talking about some of the challenges for local news organizations in India. In the past, we've talked about sort of the issue in the United States and the United Kingdom. You know, especially in these countries, the changing business model has dramatically affected how people in rural areas outside of the major cities get their news. What does that look like in Poland?
I would say it's a little slightly different because you have the state media, which is very dominant. But at the same time, you do have some private media, and that does allow for some sort of choice amongst, at least if you have pay for cable or satellite. But there are also private stations on the regular antenna TVs or digital that you can get from just regular TV without having to pay for it. So you have you do have some choice if you want to have the choice. But if we look at the different types of media more on the local level, it is very challenging for alternative or more critical media to find a way to break through.
To provide oversight, say, of the mayor's office, of regional governor's office, something like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of the big challenges of that is because of where a lot of the revenue for local media comes from. They rely on advertising, and the biggest advertisers in Poland are companies which are state-owned or semi-state-owned. So at least they have about 50% or 51% ownership in large companies. And since the government came into power in 2015, there was a directive that these companies can no longer advertise in certain media, which gives this boost to pro-government media, because there's plenty of also private pro-government media in Poland. And that really does not, that changes the playing field. So the media does not have a level playing field, and it becomes more competitive it becomes very hard to compete in this arena.
Well, Adam Reichardt, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me.
A reminder that you're tuned in to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. On today's program, we're taking a look at the global crisis for local news organizations. If you're interested in more Global Journalists, check us out online at globaljournalist.org. There you can find our archives and additional coverage of underreported international news and human rights issues. You can also like us on Facebook, where we live stream, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, or see our videocast on YouTube. Earlier in the show, we heard about the difficulties for local news outlets in India and Poland. Up next, we're going to turn to Argentina, where the quantity and diversity of local news has shrunk dramatically in the past decade. So for more on this, we're going to bring in Irina Caselli, who wrote about this in the most recent index on censorship. She joins us now from the Italian city of Lampedusa. Irina, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, Argentina has about 44 million people in it, and so it's a good-sized country, but it has been going through a lot of economic turmoil lately. There was a report that something like 3,000 journalists have lost their jobs just over the past 3 years there. What's going on?
Well, it's been a mix of something that is happening kind of globally, which you've been discussing, and something that is very specific to the Argentine market. So, of course, we know that a lot of newspapers are losing their readership and they're trying to redesign themselves to go digital. So some newspapers have actually, laid off some workers because of that reason. But then there's something that is very specific to the Argentine context, which is that when Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, who's the former president, who's now running again as vice president for the October elections, when she took over in 2007, she actually poured a lot of money into government advertisement that basically ended up in a lot of local media, meaning that a lot of new media actually started up just to absorb the advertisement money. And so all of a sudden, there was actually a boom in Argentina, in Argentine media, just at a time when internationally media were cutting down.
Okay, and so all this was sort of fueled by the Kirchner government's spending on media then, and then I would tend to believe that these news outlets, these newer news outlets, tended to support the government.
Yes, that was actually one of the problems with these media outlets. Some, actually considered them propaganda, but a lot of those that were born during this bonanza period. When Macri took over 4 years ago,
Sort of a right of center opposition party.
Exactly. So he came from the other side of the political spectrum. And one of the things that he did was divert the money. So the money, first of all, much less money was invested. And then a lot of the money actually went directly to one of the most powerful media group that is called the Clarín Media Group, that is more aligned to the Macri government. So it's to the center right. So what happened is that a lot of this new media disappeared. Others redesigned themselves. So for example, one of them called Tiempo Argentino, they found themselves without an owner, without any pay all of a sudden. And what they did was to create a cooperative, and they started running the newspaper among many journalists and designed the membership model that is actually still going quite strong. And Tiempo Argentino remains one of the strong sort of left-wing voices oriented towards social policies, something quite kind of different to, compared to the other media that are now present in the Argentine media landscape.
Well, what about, talk to us about local news then. If you're outside of Buenos Aires, if you're outside of the big cities, who is covering the local news for you? Who is watching the local governments, the regional governments, the court systems?
Well, that's always been a big problem because a third of the Argentine population actually lives in and around the capital city of Buenos Aires. So some of the other bigger cities always had some local newspapers. But then, with the advertisement model kind of failing and a lot of people going digital, a lot of these local newspapers especially started struggling. It's also true that when it comes to digital, it's also offered a lot of, small operations, the opportunity to, for example, create TV reports just with a phone. So there's been a very interesting kind of scenario of media and not necessarily sort of official media, but just like very strong local journalists tweeting news from, from locally, from the regions outside of Buenos Aires. At the same time, there's also been a big loss, which was DIN, Diarios y Noticias, was the largest local news agency in Argentina. It was privately owned and it shut down. And they were very strong because they had correspondents all over Argentina. And they were one of the primary news sources for a lot of the local newspapers. And so
okay, so it sounds like this was like a newswire, like the Associated Press then, where they would have a reporter covering like a state legislature or a mayor's office or a court system or something like that.
Absolutely. And they were local in Argentina, and they were very present in regions outside of Buenos Aires. And let's say that I would say that most of the newspapers and radio stations would get their reports, and that would feed into their coverage of the rest of the country. So when DIN shut down, that created kind of a vacuum when it comes to news coming from the regions and kind of feeding into the regions. So in a way, some of the people that I've been speaking to about this issue said that the closing down of DIN was one of the elements that created more insularity when it comes to these regions that sometimes are very far away territorially, because Argentina is actually a huge country. It's the eighth largest when it comes to in the world when it comes to surface.
Well, let's talk about what is replacing it then. And it does seem like social media has grown in Argentina just in the past couple of years. And we saw next door in Brazil with the rise of the populist president Jair Bolsonaro that there was a lot of disinformation via WhatsApp and Facebook groups specifically. Is that something that you are seeing in Argentina as Argentina heads towards elections in November?
So it's definitely something that is being monitored right now, but we haven't seen a big rise the way that it's happened in Brazil. There's also a stronger culture of fact-checking. There's, for example, Chequeado, which is one of the new kind of up-and-coming digital news outlets that focuses mainly on fact-checking. It's definitely something that people are wary of. And it's, you know, it's very worrying because actually news reports and all sorts of polls have shown that most Argentines get their news online right now, which is something that is very different compared to, you know, 5 years ago or even 4 years ago when the latest presidential election took place.
Well, we're growing short on time, but just quickly, I understand that there are many different types of digital news startups trying to fill this local news vacuum in Argentina. Which one are you most optimistic about?
Well, I really trust Redacción, which is kind of a wordplay between Network Action and Newsroom. They're new. They're based on a membership model. They do very different coverage, specifically focused on social issues. And they seem to be doing really well among young people, especially. So we'll see what happens with them.
Well, Irina Caselli, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jason.
And we're out of time for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA, Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Irina Caselli, Adam Reichart, and Rituparna Chatterjee for joining us. Our producer this week is Edom Kasae. Our visual editor is Megan Smaltz. Trevor Hook runs the phones. Aaron Hay is audio engineer, and Travis McMillan is director. Support for the show comes from the Knight Foundation through the Lee Hills Chair in Free Press Studies. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.